18th, 1978.
Is it a good tape?
It's an okay tape recorder. The one I was using. The one I was using had a terrible squeak in it, so I took it in for repair. This is Moss's tape. Okay, first question. In thinking about the history of the lesbian community in Buffalo being written, what do you think is important for people to know about?
That it's so, that it's hard, you know, that the whole situation sucks. Well, you know, I guess it doesn't. I mean, it depends on your point of view. The bar situation sucks, you know, like the bars, you know, like I just told you this morning, the bar situation has all changed again now. You know, the bars, they open up and, you know, 5 minutes later, they want men to come in instead of women, and then they go straight again. They make their, you know, 6 months worth of bucks, and then they close down. And there's really, it's so hard to come out. It's so difficult to do anything. I mean, I guess there's, you know, I don't know, women's bodies and that kind of stuff, if you're into that kind of stuff, which I'm not. But just to go out and have a drink is like, you know, a real pain in the ass. It's really, just that it's hard, that really is the most important thing that I can think of, is that it is so difficult to, you know, to come out in the first place. And then when you get out, sometimes it's hard to stay out, you know. I mean, well, you have to define what out is then.
You wanna do that?
Well, I mean.
For you then.
Well, if you, like, if you don't have a lover, okay, and you're looking for a lover, you know, you have the bar situation, which changes every 5 minutes, you know, which certainly doesn't help. And then once you find a lover, like, I guess what you do is you develop a circle, you know, people that you see most of the time, and you sort of get away from the bars. But then if anything happens between you and that lover, you know, it's not like you know, well, you know, like, there's this spectrum, and there's no name, and there's, you know, all these straight bars, and those bars are always there, you know, and you can always go back to those bars. But when, you know, when you're gay, you can't always go back to the bar, because it's not there anymore, or it's straight, you know, you walk in and you go, uh-oh, things changed. And that's what I have found to be, like, a real bummer as far as being gay, is getting out and staying out. And, you know?
Let's test the tape and see if it records. Can you remember the gay scene since you came out, which is when?
I just wrote it down.
Right.
I really did. I went the other day. No lie, at work, I sat and I wrote down everything that I could remember, who I was with when, so I could get, because I don't remember, you know, like, I have.
That's great.
My chronological sense is like real. I mean, I remember everybody, and I remember all the different things and stuff, but I can't remember who was when, or I remember somebody was here and somebody was there, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, this person must have came before this person, because I knew her, you know.
Yeah.
But I came out, I believe it was in 1970 or 71. I'm not exactly sure which. It was like, I think maybe the summer, or the winter, spring of 70, 71, in that, you know, there. And the first place I mean, coming out by the bars is what I'm talking about. I came out to the.
But you came out,
being gay in a long time before that.
Yeah.
I was with a woman the first time when I was 17, so that's.
How old are you now?
Thirty.
Thirteen
years ago is when I actually had a sexual contact with a woman.
Okay.
Then I had an affair, you know, I was with somebody, but it was in the closet.
Yeah.
And then I was not with anybody for like 2 years, and then I was with somebody for about a year, and then I came out to the bar, tailing that relationship. And that was the Villa Capri. That was back in the days of the villa.
Yes, those were the good old days.
Were they the good old days?
Yes, yes, yes.
Was it better then?
Oh, yes, yeah, definitely. Well, of course, the music has changed. I don't like the new music, maybe that's what it is. No, the bar scene was, I don't know, the villa, I guess, is the very first thing, you know, so maybe that's why it's a fond memory, because it was a new experience. And now it's become very jaded and disgusting and gross and, you know, horrible. Mm-hmm. But the Villa, see, the Villa was a real neat place because it was mostly women. There were very few men in the Villa, and it was small, and they played, you know, neat music, and you could dance slow a lot. Like, that's another thing. You can't dance slow hardly anymore. Even in the bars that there are, the few that there are, they play, all they play is disco music all the time. You know, because I guess they're, I don't know if they're nervous about the law or what their problem is. But those were the good old days. I mean, it was a good time. I mean, when I came out, you know, as far as coming out into the public scene, oh my God, it was a lot easier, you know, than it is now, I think, because, well, I don't know. Like, I know some people now that are in the closet, and like, the one girl wants to come out and the other one doesn't. And the reason the other girl doesn't want to is because, you know, like, she's afraid she won't be able to get her license. She's, you know, in a course that requires a license. And she's gone to college for 4 years, you know, and if she's found out that she's gay, she won't be able to get her license. And, you know, like, that really sucks, you know. I mean, because why should that make any difference? And she won't go to the bar because, you know, somebody wants her. But, you know, the person that's in the bar, it's easier, is in the bar for the same reason she is. So why should, you know, why should that make any difference? And, like, when I came out, I never thought of that. You know, when I first went to the Villa, it never occurred to me that I would see somebody I knew in there, you know, and I should worry about it, until I did. And, you know, like, I just went, oh my God, I went to school with her, why is she here? And then she came up and said, hi, and I said, hi, are we both here for the same reason? Oh, yeah, yeah. So it wasn't really any problem, you know. But, like, when you go to Rosie's, you know, which is mixed, really, that's no problem because, you know, the people that are in there, they don't know really if you're gay or straight. It's a mixed place, and...
You mean mixed and straight, not...
Yeah, gay
not
and
mixed.
Straight, not mixed. Well, it's mixed men and women because it's gay and straight, so straight
yeah.
couples go in there and gay couples
oh,
go in
I
there.
See.
And there's, you know, no touchies, no nothings. I mean, it's like, you know, the owner is extremely hysterical. I mean, if you even, you know, I mean, you're allowed that, you know, when somebody you haven't seen in a long time comes in, you're allowed that little hug, you know, and that's it. And then she comes over with her hands on her hips and kind of gives you dirty looks. And, like, you know, there's no physical contact at all is allowed in Rosie's, unless you can sneak it in the bathroom or something like that. But, I forgot what I was talking about.
Were other bars different from there? Or what about...
Well, yeah, the Villa, I mean, they were, you know... Well, the bars are still like that. I don't know, I guess it was just because the Villa was the first bar I came on, and maybe that's why I think it was the good old days, because it was nice in there. And everybody was friendly. Like there's, I've noticed over the past couple of years, especially, there's a lot more fighting going on. There's more, like, I don't know if it's the people that are now coming out. It seems to me to be, you know, it seems like it's the younger generation.
Well,
they fight more. You know, I mean, they have these physical fights. You know, these women. I mean, about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, we were at Valentino's, and these girls were out in the parking lot beating the shit out of each other. I couldn't believe it, you know, because the one girl, they were lovers, and the one girl wanted, or they had just broken up or something, and the one girl wanted the other one to come back, and, you know, she wouldn't, so they started beating at each other's bodies, you know, which I thought was really weird. I mean, there were very few, the fights that occurred back in the old days was between butches, you know, there was a great butch femme thing, and you would see butches fight occasionally, and even that didn't happen, and the fights that occurred between lovers were just kind of yelling and screaming at each other, and then they would go home, maybe, you know, kill each other at home, but, you know, they didn't do it in public, and now they just, you know, all kinds of people are, of course, there isn't role-playing now that there was, you know, 8 years ago, when I came out. That the people, you know, the girls don't seem to get into that. They aren't into that so much anymore, I don't think. Although there's a few little dykey types that are just, you know, real butchy, little lovers. But then they run around going, oh, I'm not butchy, I'm not them. I'm just me. You know, all the whole time. But it seems like all of them are all the kids that I know now that, like, they go to Brackport, you know, that school is just, I swear to God, they just raise and breed them, you know, like, it's amazing. Everybody I know, everybody that I've run into in the past year has gone to Brackport, or is going to Brackport, or hopes to go to Brackport, and,
Are these phys ed?
Yeah, they're all phys ed majors, and they all run around, you know, being jocks, you know, real jockey. Which I guess maybe in my mind, jockey is confused with witchy, you know, which I guess doesn't necessarily have to be. But okay. There's no really defined role playing anymore, which kind of messes me up sometimes. You know, I get a little confused. But I don't, see, because, you know, like, well, Kathy, you know, my lover is, like, she's 10 years younger than I am, but she's definitely femme, you know, and I don't know, you know, she's supposed to be coming out neither now. You know, if she was...
What do you mean supposed to be?
To be what it is now. It doesn't seem to be the correct thing to do to pick a role. You're supposed to come out and be a neither or a both or something. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I'm, you know, I just get confused. I just stand around, at least I have a lover. I mean, if I had to go out now and find a lover, I'd be really upset. Because where would I find one, you know? I mean, and how would I know?
Well, sure, I know what you mean. the tape recorder doesn't know what you mean.
It's real hard to explain.
You found it easier to find lovers when you first came out?
Yeah. Yes, because there were defined role playing. There was defined role playing, and you know, like when I came out, I never made a conscious choice to be a butch type person. I just am, you know, and it's always just something that's always been there. I was a tomboy, and then it just kind of extended itself, you know, instead of, you know, dwindling off like I guess it usually does. And now, you know. Like, I'm not attracted to jocks, you know, and, like, everybody's a jock nowadays. I've never seen anything like it. They're all jocks, you know. It's just, the girl I was with before, Kathy, is a jock, which was really strange for me to be with her, you know.
She wasn't when you started being with her?
Yeah, she was, but I didn't know that. I guess I didn't see that part until after I was in the relationship, and the relationship, you know, turned out not to be exactly what I thought it was going to be, and then, you know, I started noticing more and more that she was a definite jack, and she's going to Brackport now. You know, everybody goes to Brackport. And that's when, I guess that was part of why the relationship died, because she was a jack, and I didn't want a jack, you know. And what I meant about Kathy is, like, she's supposed to be coming out a neither, you know, in this particular time span, you know, like this past couple of years, it's been the thing to be a neither. You just, you know, but to me, the neithers are more butchy than they are femme. You know, the neithers appear to me to be butch, mm-hmm. as opposed to coming out neither,
mm-hmm.
or both, you know.
So when people, like, try to be non-role playing, to you it looks more butch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But now Kathy, all right, she's only 20 years old, and coming out in this particular time, she should be coming out as a neither, and she's definitely a femme. But maybe she's just a femmy type neither instead of a butch type neither. It's pretty hard to tell.
Okay.
Although, you know, since we've been living together, she's definitely, you know, I mean, we have definitely gotten into roles, you know. I mean, there's no question that
what does that mean
to
you, getting into roles?
Well, I don't know. I always feel like husband, and she always feels like the wife, you know, or whatever. I have to rhyme up something fierce.
You want to get some water and turn it off?
I think I do need to.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm taking medication.
Can you define, at least in terms of when you first came out into gay society, what the rules were for butch and femme? How did you know the difference? Certainly wasn't the length of their hair.
No. Although the real super butchy ones have no super short hair.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the super masculine types, you know. It's the masculine, feminine trait type thing, you know, and like the butchier types tend to emphasize their masculine traits more than the feminine types.
I wanted to ask about a particular, like, sort of a theory that one of the women working on the project has come up with, and that is that in terms of romantic and sexual satisfaction, there seems to be a big difference between what you can expect from a man and what you can expect from a butch. It seems her theory is that men are more interested in pleasing themselves, and butches are more interested in pleasing their fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it really isn't exactly the same as being heterosexual in that way.
No, not that way. No.
Do you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. I definitely agree with that. I guess it's because it's a basis for a relationship. You know, when you get into something with somebody, the heterosexual marriage type of thing is the only thing you have to base on, you know, the only thing that I had, okay, at the time when I came out. And I think the butch is more aggressive and kind of leads the show, and the femme just follows, you know, which is, oh my god, feminists everywhere. You know, they have a stroke. But, you know, I mean, I'm willing for, you know, Kathy could do all kinds of neat things if she wants to. You know, she could build bookshelves and stuff when she feels like it. You know, I don't care. We don't like it, like in our relationship, we don't, like, it's not. You know, like, I don't just take out the garbage, you know, I mean, she takes out the garbage too sometimes, and the only thing that she does everything of is cook, because I hate to cook, I can't stand cooking. Everything else we pretty much split, you know, we take turns if it needs being done, we do it. And in bed, you know, like, the sexual relationship is definitely, I mean, I'm much more concerned over her sexual satisfaction than over my own. Fortunately, she's concerned over mine, so I don't have to worry about it too much, you know. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about that particular thing.
Let's sort of hold this topic until later, and we'll get some kind of chronology of your life in Buffalo and your family and relationships. You've always lived in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And you lived with both parents.
Yep.
I know that you have two brothers.
Right. Two younger brothers.
Uh-huh.
One is 3 years younger and the other one is 9 years younger.
Uh-huh.
And the one that's 3 years younger isn't here. He lives in California. The other one's married and he's got a kid. And I have two nieces.
Okay.
I have two nieces?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My little niece just got the big chaos. It's terrible. She's got this big cast and the lady's all spread apart with a rag and everything.
She has a hip problem?
Yeah, hip dislocation. My brothers, you know, are both aware of it. I came out to my parents when I was 24. 24? I can't remember anymore. It's been much better since I did that. That's something that's very difficult, is leading two lives with your parents. It's one thing to lead two lives on the job. You know, if you have to protect your job, but with your family, and especially if you live with your family, I mean, like, that's practically impossible, you know, to carry on this double life, you know. Mm-hmm. One part of you're coming out with your parents, you know, like the straightest person on earth, and you're running around like a crazy person on the other side trying to find a lover. Mm-hmm. But it's much easier once you come out, and I wish everybody would come out to their parents, just at least, you know, I wish everybody could. You know, that's the thing. I know they're, like, Kathy's parents, Kathy's mother has, like, just about disowned her. Kathy's mother, you know, hates her. I mean, she just, she won't even talk to her. And that has hurt Kathy a lot, you know, really wrecked her up. Her father doesn't know. Her parents were divorced, but they were separated when she was like 4, so her father doesn't know anything about Kathy, as far as Kathy being gay. My brothers both know. My one brother knew before I told my parents. He decided that he knew. Because he caught me once. I had something to do with it. And then my other brother, when I did come out, my mother asked me not to tell my youngest brother. Because she was afraid that, you know, like peer pressure would get to him and he would be ashamed of me and embarrassed about me and stuff like that. So I didn't tell him until, I don't know, he was 17. And then I guess he was about 18 or 19 when I finally thought I should tell him. Because he knew, I knew. And he was more upset over the fact that we didn't trust him enough to tell him than over the fact that I was, you know, he didn't care. And then when he got married, he got married kind of hurriedly. And my mother felt it was only right to tell his wife, you know, that I was gay, and she asked me to stand up for the wedding anyways, which I couldn't live without that, running around in a gown. But, it was cool. The only one, I'm out to everyone, completely. You know, at work I'm out all over, except my grandmother. My mother's mother doesn't know, and I would never tell her because she wouldn't be able to handle it.
How old is she?
She's 69. This round age. And I'm sure she knows. I mean, she's got to be. I mean, she has to be retarded, you know, mentally, physically, and every other way, not to know. I mean, the fact that I haven't been with a man in, like, 6 years must, you know, give her some kind of a hint. And, like, the fact that every time I see her, you know, I'm with a different, or I'm not different, but I'm with a woman, and that I get into these women that I'm with constantly, you know, for many, many moons, I'm sure she knows, you know, she must, but it's one of those situations where if she doesn't say it out loud, then she doesn't have to worry about it. As long as she doesn't hear the word lesbian out loud, then she can just sort of ignore the whole scene and accept it the way it is, and, you know, this is my granddaughter and this is how she is. But I'm out at work, and I'm out my father's side of the family. I guess my father told his mother. And, you know, the aunts and uncles and that kind of thing. I don't know if you just called them up and told them one day or if it just came out one time or what happened. But they all accept me. You know, like when there's something going on and there's a family thing on my father's side of the family, there I'm always invited with Kathy, you know, or whoever I'm with. But, you know, it's been Kathy for a while now. And even really my mother's side of the family, like my grandmother, that's why I think she must know because she always includes Kathy, you know, in the conversations, or, you know, like when I take her shopping or something, she'll ask me, you know, if I want anything, and I'll pick this out or that out, and she'll say, well, does Kathy like it too? You know, it's not like she doesn't know, you know, I mean, she knows that Kathy and I live together, and I think she knows that it goes deeper than just, you know,
What do your parents, or what have your parents done for a living during your growing up period?
My mother was a lady. My mother tended car. My father worked at Union Carbide. And from when I was about, well, we moved to the city when I was 9. I was born in Amherst, and I lived upstairs with my mother's parents. You know, we all lived upstairs with them. And we moved to the city when I was 9 years old. And my mother was pregnant, which is why we had to move, because there wasn't enough room. And so they bought a house in the city.
What area?
Riverside, Black Rock. And I really hated it. That was probably one of the most traumatic things in my childhood, was moving into the city, because I really hated the city. I couldn't stand it. But, you know, we were there, and there wasn't anything I could do about it. And when I was like 10 or 11, I guess I was maybe 11, things got real bad because my brother, well, after my brother was born, he was very sick. He had, like when he was 6 months old, he almost died. He was in
this is your youngest
brother. Yeah, Marty. This is my littlest brother. He almost died. He had strep throat and pneumonia and bronchitis and asthma all at once. You know, like, talk about getting congestion in your lungs. And they had to rush him in the middle of the night to Children's Hospital and perform tracheotomy and all this. He had round-the-clock nurses for 3 weeks. You know, it was like, you know, the bills were obscene. He was 10 years old before the bills were paid off. As a matter of fact, that's how bad they were. And obviously my parents weren't making it too well. I mean, they had, you know,
what did your father do with you?
My father was a rigger. And don't ask me what a rigger is, because I'm not sure. He used to climb scaffolding and do things on tanks or something. I don't know. And my mother tended bar. She finally had to get a job, and she was a barmaid. And then my father had to get a second job doing snow fencing, painting snow fencing, which is really a dirty, disgusting job. I mean, he would come home at 5 o'clock, and my mother would have slept all day because she used to go to work at 7 o'clock at night and work until, no, she went to work at 6 o'clock at night, and she worked until 4 o'clock the next morning, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock the next morning. And my father would go to work in the morning at 7:30, and he would come home at 5 o'clock and have dinner and then go to his second job, which he was at until 11 or 12 o'clock every night. So I had to, like, pretty much raise both my brothers and take care of the house and cook dinner and, you know, all that. It was, we had a babysitter until I was maybe 13, but I still had a lot of responsibility, you know, because I was the one that was really kind of like the babysitter. I was like, well, was it all right for them to do this? And, you know, the babysitter depended on me to tell her what was right. Didn't have a lot of free time. And then when I started high school, we got rid of the babysitter because everybody was in school full time by then. And we got rid of the babysitter, and I was in charge of everybody from that point on. Like, I had to come home right after school and, you know, take care of my brothers and cook dinner for my father and my brothers and my mother. And she would get up like at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon and eat and run off to work. And then my father would go home and eat and run off to a second job. My father was an alcoholic on top of that. Wherever he found time to be an alcoholic, I don't know. But he managed it. Well, the snow fencing thing, that was only in the winter time. In the summer, you know, he didn't build snow fences in the summertime. They did it in the fall, I guess it was. And loading it onto the railroad cars, you know, after they painted it. But my father was an alcoholic, and my mother was a teetotaler, which really made kind of a, you know, constant conflict. My father would drink because my mother wasn't home, and my mother was out working because my father drank, you know. So he would drink more because she was out working, and it was just kind of like a vicious circle. He'd go down to, you know, like he'd be lonely, so he'd go down where she was working and sit at the bar and drink up, you know, while she was making it, earning it. And there was, you know, some rough spots, to say the least. My parents were separated twice. The second time, they almost went through a divorce, but then they found out my father had cancer, and my mother took him back because she felt sorry for him. And he had surgery, he had a testicle and a prostate gland removed. And then they found, like about 4 years later, I guess it was, they found cirrhosis in the liver. And, you know, I mean, alcoholics usually get that. And my mother, things got better for them, you know, once those kids started getting older and they got the bills paid up and their things did get a little bit better. And my mother quit her job. But then when my father became medically disabled, so he had all this, you know, insurance money coming. He made more money when he was medically disabled than when he worked. And my mother was able to quit work. But then one of his insurances, something or other, ran out. So she went to school about 4 years ago for a doctor's assistant. And now she works as a doctor's assistant. My father doesn't work. My father hasn't worked in, must be about 8 years now, 7 or 8 years since he's worked. Which in the beginning was real hard, you know, for him to adjust to, you know, because like he stays home and takes care of the house now. My mother goes out and works, and it's kind of strange sometimes. Calls me up sometimes and talks to me. I was never close to my father, never had any close relationship with my father. I was very close to my mother, extremely close to my mother. But my father, he was an alcoholic, and my mother didn't pull any punches about that. It was, you know, my father was no good, and my father was weak, and my father was wishy-washy, and, you know, like, I had no respect for my father. It's only been the last couple of years that I even liked my father, you know, much less love. I mean, I loved him because he was my father, and you're supposed to love your father, so I always loved him for that reason, which isn't really love. I mean, that's kind of, like, required feeling, so, you know, I felt it. But as far as respecting him, I never respected him. To this day, I mean, like, I don't know, I guess I do now, because he's changed a lot. He's still an alcoholic. I mean, he still drinks, but doesn't drink like he used to. Of course, now, it's like a matter, it's not life and death exactly, but it's not good for him to drink, and he knows it. And my mother since she has gotten her act together, my mother had a nervous breakdown, which happened right after I came out to my parents, which did a whole guilt trip on me because I thought it was my fault that she ended up in the movie tombs. My mother was in the funny farm for 6 weeks, 5 weeks, something like that. She went through shock treatments and everything.
Yeah.
She was in a little prior, which is now defunct or a different place,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. And that's like private.
Yeah, she went bananas. Like, it was just, well, there was a whole lot of other things, though, that contributed to it. But at the time that she went bonkers, I just kind of thought that I did it. You know, it was my fault because I came out and told I was a lesbian. And, oh, my God, what have I done?
This is what year? 19... If you were 24...
6, 7... I'm trying to think. It's really hard to even remember these things. Wait a minute. Let me look at my little piece of paper.
That's pretty weird.
And then I went over it with Kathy to make sure that we did. I don't have everybody on here. I missed a few, but that must have been it. See, now I don't have her on here. Okay. It must have been in 72. 72 or 73. I think maybe 72. Then again, see, now I was with Lynn. If I was with Lynn in 73. Must have been 73 that my mother went bonkers.
But you had come out to her before then, didn't you?
Yeah. I had come out to her, but it wasn't much before that. So,
oh, I see.
You know, it was kind of like, I felt like I was the crowning glory to, you know, a multitude of other problems. My grandfather had died, and my grandmother was totally dependent on my mother, you know, because she just, you know, couldn't exist without my grandfather, so she transferred all her needs to my mother. My father was an alcoholic. My brother, by that time, was into drugs very heavily. And I was queer. So, you know, like, whoops, there you go, Mom, over the edge. So they stuck her in, and they gave her shock treatments. And, you know, she came out the other side, thank God. You know, like, I guess there's a lot to be said against shock treatments, but there's some to be said for them because they did help my mother. I mean, I have to admit that.
She had depression?
Yeah, she was sitting, you know, crying, staring at me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she'd be on depression. It's not quite the word for it. But the shock treatments, you know, I guess it's like it bonked out everything that was bad, and then she slowly reabsorbed all the stuff and at her own speed instead of as it was happening, which was like chunk, 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 you know, all at once, and building up on her until she couldn't handle it anymore. She just kind of said the hell with it and started to cry and didn't stop. And I thought, you know, at the time it was like I did that, you know, because I was the last little piece of good news, you know, which didn't make me feel too good, but there wasn't anything I could do about it because, you know, I had to be what I was, and I was at the point where I could no longer handle, you know, trying to pretend I was something else, with my parents especially.
When did you first have any realization that you were not exactly like all the other little girls in the neighborhood?
I always remember being gay. I mean, I don't remember ever not feeling like I was gay. I can remember when I was 4, 5, 6 years old at the most, someplace in that, like 5 or 6 years old. I had a best friend, and I went to her house to spend the weekend. And I can remember, you know, feeling really strange towards her. I mean, she was my best friend, but I always wanted to touch her, you know, and I always felt like I was a boy. I mean, I always felt like I was a boy when I was younger, when I lived on the farm especially. I was treated like a boy, which certainly helped towards feeling like a boy. My grandfather, I was the first born, and my grandfather was really into having a grandson, and I ended up being a girl, which, you know, apparently not. So I kind of identified with, you know, with his need for me to be a boy, and I tried real hard to be a boy. And then my brother came along 3 years later, which, you know, really fucked things up because he was the boy. And I was very busy running around trying to be the boy. He was really the boy, but he was still too little yet to be the boy, you know. So I was the boy. And I had a horrendous case of penis envy until I was like, you know, 8 or 9 years old. I was really jealous of my brother. I hated him a lot, you know, very jealous. And then the second brother came along, he really did me in, you know, like, oh my God, you know, why me? Why did I have to be a hero? And I thought I was a better boy than both of them, you know, I mean, I was nicer, really. You know, I still do. I still think I'm not a better boy, but I'm a better, I'm a better husband, provider type person than either of my brothers, you know, and I know I'm a better lover than either one of them, you know, and I think that the woman I'm with is much happier than the women that my brothers are with. I know she is, you know, and I would never tell my brothers that. And it's real neat because my brother is married to a girl named Kathy, and my other brother is living with a girl named Kathy in California. So we all have Kathys. It's real cute. My other brother is expecting a baby too in California. And so I'm going to have another niece or nephew. That's one of the things about us, he's not being able to have kids. I would like to be able to do that. You know, that would be kind of a neat thing to do.
When you say you have kids, do you mean give birth to a child, or have a child in your house, or have your lover give birth to a child?
Yeah, I have my lover give birth to a child.
Okay.
I definitely have fatherly instincts and impulsive instincts. I don't have any desire to carry a baby, you know, or give birth to people.
Okay, a little
I know, it goes away after a minute or so. I forget it real quick, I understand. From what I heard, but no, I would like to, you know, I would like to create a child with someone, you know, and the only way I could do that, I guess, you know, I mean, I know it's for me to have it, you know, with somebody, but I've got a plan in the back of my head, maybe someday I could put it to effect with Kathy, I don't know.
Do you not want to talk about
it? No, it's cool. Kathy and I had talked about it already. After my brother got his wife pregnant for the second time, we decided he was pretty potent.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could, you know, talk him into it, we were thinking of some kind of artificial insemination plan, using my brother as the father, you know, as the...
This is your youngest
brother. Yeah, my young, uh-huh. Not, definitely not my second, no, my first brother.
Uh-huh.
The one in California, he's a drug addict, he's been in too many drugs. His children, like this baby that is expected, they, you know, the prognosis and the normality of the child is like zero, to say the least. No, my brother Marty,
sometimes it snaps, I just want to make sure it doesn't snap, but, you know, he doesn't forget to do that.
Marty's got two relatively healthy children. I mean, you know, both of his kids are healthy. The little girl's got the hip problem, but, you know, the newest one, but that was a birthing problem. That wasn't, you know, anything from drugs or anything. Marty, you know, smokes a little pot here and then that's it. You know, he's not into heavy drugs.
Uh-huh.
And I had talked to Kathy about it because Marty and I look quite a bit alike, for one thing, and we have very similar personalities, you know, and of my two brothers, I like him the best, you know, if I have to pick one, I like Marty. And we do, like, he's a good kid, it's all my, you know.
Uh-huh.
And we're both, like, kind of considered, like, animals and things like that, you know. I think it would be real neat. I think I could really get into being a parent to a child of Kathy and my brother, you know. But I don't know how my brother would feel about it. You know, I don't know if he could get into it, you know. It wouldn't be a case of actual sexual contact to get Kathy pregnant. I wouldn't want that. I wouldn't be able to handle that, and neither would Kathy, I'm sure. I don't know about Marty. I don't even care. But, you know, an artificial insemination thing, you know, that they do all the time now. I mean, they got these test tube babies and all this other garbage coming up. So, you know, it would be a feasible thing, you know, except that, like, you know, I can't afford to have a kid. You can't get right now. We want to make a lot of money for both of us to live on. Much less three of us to live on. But I guess that will always be something. Like I've always wanted to father a child, you know. I mean, I've always wanted to have a child with my lover, with her being the mother, which only leaves me the father. There isn't anything else left, you know. And it's not, like I said, it's not, I don't want to bear a child. I don't want to have a child of my own. I want to have a child with somebody. And that's a bummer. It's, you know, that's kind of a bad trip to have to do, but, you know, that's really the only bad thing I can think of about being gay, except getting beat up. But, you know, they don't do it too much nowadays.
How did your parents react?
My mother hated it. My mother just said,
oh my god.
Well, actually what she said was, I'm glad you finally told me. Because she'd been trying to wiggle it out of me for like 5 years or something, since I was 17. For about 6 or 7 years. But, and I almost told her, like a lot of times, I almost told her. But one time I asked her if she would rather I was a lesbian or pregnant and not married. And she told me she would rather that I was pregnant and not married. So I decided that being a lesbian was really not what she wanted for me. So from that point on, I decided that she would never ever know. But when it finally came out, I mean, I had a lover in Binghamton, and it was real hard going back and forth to Binghamton without my parents wondering why I was doing it every weekend. So I finally had to tell them. And at first, I wasn't going to tell them. I was just going to move out. You know, like I said, I'm 24, 25, whatever I was, and, you know, I'm old enough to live by myself now and the birds would leave the nest and all that. And I told my mother I was moving out, and like, she knows me moving. And she knew there was more to it than that, so I finally said, yeah, you know, the whole buzz is that I'm homosexual. And, you know, like, my father came home from wherever he was, and she called him in my room and said, you know, Linda just told me she thinks she's homosexual. And I said, Mother, I am homosexual. You know, it's not a case of thinking I'm homosexual. I am homosexual. So she, Linda just told me she's homosexual. And my father said, well, it takes all kinds to make the world, and walked out of the room. You know, and my mother just kind of went, you know, Marty, get back in here. And she, you know, beat him up and dragged him back in the bedroom and said, we have to help her. And he said, why? What's wrong with her? And she, my mother said, well, she's, you know, she's homosexual. And my father says, well, so what? You know, it doesn't, so what? Yeah, you know, my mother was just so bad. And my father was just so cool. It was amazing. You know, he said, well, what do you want to do? And she says, well, you know, we have to get help. And he said, all right, then, you know, get her help, whatever you think, you know. And it wasn't that he didn't care, that, you know, he wasn't interested in me. It was just that he really didn't believe there was anything wrong with me. My father's very open-minded, you know, and like I guess maybe he always knew, too. I don't know. Or, you know, but I never felt, not for a second, that it was because he didn't care about me. It was just because he didn't, you know, it really didn't upset him. He really didn't see anything wrong with it. So my mother ran out to the phone and called the family doctor and said, oh my God, Linda's a lesbian, what are we going to do? And he said, you know, well, you could see a psychiatrist. So she got the name of a psychiatrist, and then she came and asked me if I would see one, and I said, yep. You know, I would do it to please her, but that I, you know, for myself, it wasn't necessary. So I went to a psychiatrist, and fortunately, I lucked out, and the psychiatrist that we saw was a pretty together guy. Although, as it turned out, he wasn't good for my mother, but as far as being good for homosexuals, he's great. I mean, he asked me if I was unhappy, and I said no. And he asked me if I had any trouble accepting myself, and I said no, which I didn't. And did I have any trouble at work or with my friends, and I said no. And he said, well, then why are you here? And I said, for my mother. And he said, well, if you're not having any problem with your homosexuality, then your mother should be here, not you. And I said, good point, Doc. And I left. And I went home to my mother, and I said, ha-ha, I'm not going anymore. It's your turn. So she started going to him, and that's when she had a nervous breakdown. As a matter of fact, he's not a good psychiatrist. I mean, he was a good psychiatrist insofar as he didn't try to change me and cure me and all that. But as far as being a good psychiatrist, he saw my mother for like, I think almost, let me see, I came out, it was almost a full year. Because I think I came out in like September, October, and it was the following September that she had a nervous breakdown. And that whole year, all he did was write out prescriptions for, you know, tranquilizers. That's all he did for my mother. He didn't even listen to her to any extent, which I think is, to me, that's what a psychiatrist is for. You go and you talk your little brains out, you know, and he says key words, and then you come back with, you know, little solutions for your problems. But he didn't do anything. He took her for, like, you know, it was costing her $50 for 5 minutes, long enough to write out a script, and that was it. And she finally went bonkers, and he put her in Lumibriant and did the shock treatments. And when she got out, you know, like, she realized that this guy wasn't doing her any good, so she started seeing someone else. And she sees a woman now. She goes to a psychiatrist, but she goes to Dr. Lynch, who I believe is a psychiatrist. and he has an associate who is a psychologist, a female. I can't remember what her name is, though. She's got a funny foreign name, whatever it is. My mother sees her, and then she reviews with Dr. Lynch, you know, whatever. And if my mother feels it's necessary, or if they feel it's necessary, then she sees Dr. Lynch, you know, and talks to him. But she was going on a regular basis. Now she just goes when she needs to go. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just when she feels uptight, she sees the shrink.
Yeah. So your mother's reaction was in terms of if you're having illness.
Yeah.
What's your religious background? What I'm asking about is, you know, were there any feelings of you being a sinner?
No. We're Catholic, but like the whole family sort of left the church. I don't remember my parents ever going to church.
Mm-hmm.
I went to church, you know,